Well, it's good to be back at Myerstown again. Come out into the country and worship with you this evening. Biblical view of climate change. There are many people who are concerned about this, and there may be some sitting here who are concerned about climate change. I'm not a climatologist, and there may be some here who know more about climatology than what I do, and I was thought of that many times as I was preparing this. I know there are some people who study science more than I do, and I may be talking to some people who know more about this subject, but it's been assigned, and so we will try to talk about it. Several months ago, when I was still selling gravestones, I had a phone call from a lady from Colorado. She wanted to buy a gravestone and have it placed locally in one of the local cemeteries. She wondered whether the writing on the stone would endure. And I said, "Ma'am, this is not marble. It's not sandstone. This is granite. And granite does not erode. So what you carve into granite will be there for thousands of years. And if you could come back 5,000 years from now, that carving will be just like the day that we carved it. The world is still standing." And she said, "Oh, I think that's cute. If the world's still standing, of course the world's going to be standing. It's inhabited by intelligent people who are going to preserve it." There's a lady who is not concerned about climate change. She's very well at ease that the world is going to last yet another 5,000 years. Well, God only knows. There's sometimes we have some wrong assumptions about this subject. I used to have the idea that they used to talk about global warming. And then we had about 3 years there where the temperature decreased a little bit. So they changed the terminology and don't say global warming anymore. Now they call it climate change because of those 3 years in which the temperature decreased a little. Well, that's not quite right. What actually happened was that they expanded the study, and instead of just looking at temperatures and looking at global warming, they're now looking at such factors not only as temperature but as precipitation and wind speed and storms and those kinds of things. And it's a broader study than what it used to be, and so that's why they talk about climate change instead of global warming. Global warming is only a part of climate change. And so they do know what they're talking about. Now, it used to be that when we talked about storms, insurance companies and whoever talked about it, if a storm came, it was an act of God. And if you were a polygamist, it was an act of the gods. And sometimes maybe they thought it was the demons who were doing it, or the devil. And even people who studied the Bible would sometimes think that some storms come from the devil, looking at the book of Job and say that the storm that came and blew the house down on Job's children, that was caused by the devil. And so we have that. Well, today we know that storms are a natural consequence of various factors that are involved in weather around the world, and that we do know also that God is in control. Now, there are some who don't believe that, God is in control. There are some who don't even believe that there is a God. And so what they see is something else is controlling it, and not sure maybe of all the things, and so they suppose and they study and come up with some conclusions. Not everybody who is concerned about climate change is an atheist. There are some very religious people, some very God-fearing people who believe, who are fearful about climate change, believe it is happening, and believe that man is one of the major factors in climate change. These people range from atheists to Bible believers. They range from liberal Democrats to conservative Republicans who are concerned about climate change. And so to say that, well, if all these people who are concerned about climate change would just believe in God, that's an oversimplification of it. Because there are some who really do believe that there is a God and that Jehovah is that God and would worship him and praise him. Of course, they may not worship and serve like we do, but they are very sincere in their profession of Christianity and their profession that the Bible is the truth of God's word. Now, what we have in the book of Genesis, we were studying the book of Genesis here just a few minutes ago, but we have in chapter 1, verse 28, what is called the cultural command. God blessed Adam and Eve and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. So they would see that God put man in control of the earth, that man is to have dominion. If you look closely at this verse, God put man in dominion over the animals. But he did not put him in dominion over the weather. And he told man that when he uses something, he is to replenish it wherever that's possible. To replenish it, and we see that if we use something, we should replenish it wherever that is possible. Now, there are some ways that we can replenish what we use, and there are other ways that we can. If we cut down a tree, we can oftentimes plant another one. However, if you're clearing a spot to build a house, you have to plant the tree somewhere else. And you can't plant it probably where your house is. But we know that the whole creation is groaning and travailing in pain ever since the fall of man. You read what God said there to Adam in the Garden of Eden when he put that curse on Adam and he said, by the sweat of your face you shall eat bread. And there was God was changing the climate already back there in Genesis chapter 3. Now, we are stewards of the earth, they would say. And God gave us this earth, and we are to take care of it. And there's some truth to that. When we have a field, and there is topsoil on that field, we are to do whatever we can to retain that topsoil and not have it wash away. That's part of our job of taking care of the earth. It takes 500 years to make an inch of topsoil, so we need to have that retained there and use methods of retaining that. We are stewards of the earth, but the earth is the Lord's. It belongs to him, and we only are here to use it. Now, some of these religious climate change people and wanting to manipulate and try to control the climate, would twist the scriptures in some very interesting ways. One of them is to take a verse like Revelation 11:18, talking about the judgment of God, the nations were angry, and thy wrath is come, and the time of the dead, that they should be judged, and that thou shouldest give reward unto thy servants, the prophets, and to the saints, and to them that fear thy name, small and great, and shouldest destroy them that destroy the earth. That when God comes back, one of the reasons he is going to destroy people is because they have destroyed the earth. They have used things of the earth and not replenished it. And so God is going to judge them for not exercising proper stewardship of the earth. They would say that in the Old Testament, every 7 years, the land was to lay at rest. It was to enjoy its Sabbaths. One of the reasons that God brought judgment on the nation of Israel is because they neglected that. And so he took them into captivity for 490 years until the land had its rest. It was because that they were not using the earth properly. They were not exercising proper stewardship of the earth. And so in John 3:16, God sent his only beloved Son into the world, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. God so loved the world, he so loved the cosmos, he so loved the earth, that he sent his Son into the world to be the first environmentalist. That's a twisting of the scriptures. Some of you remember my father-in-law. He said one time about a man who went into the blacksmith shop, and he saw there a wrought iron that was over this blacksmith's door, and said, fancy twistings and turnings done here. And the customer said, I would like to buy that sign. And the blacksmith said, why do you want that sign? He said, because I'd like to put it on the pulpit at our church. Fancy twistings and turnings done here. That's what happens in some of these. When they use these scriptures and they make some fancy twistings and turnings. They say that God is going to restore the earth, making it new, and Jesus died to begin that process. And we are called to help Jesus in preserving this earth by going green. Our mission efforts begin with replenishing and storing the earth. And when we go into foreign countries, we shouldn't tell them how sinful they are in their moral conduct, but we should first tell them about something that they can relate to and how they are misusing their environment, and help them to do better in their stewardship of the earth. And so what used to be the wrong focus of the social gospel, in today's world, it's a wrong emphasis in environmentalism, going into third world countries and trying to approach that. And Satan will always have a substitute for the gospel. Today it is environmentalism that they're taking in. Well, let's look at who controls the weather. That song that we just sang was a wonderful song that reminding us that he controls it. Job chapter 37, verse 11, by watering he wearieth the thick cloud, he scattereth the bright cloud. It is turned about by his counsels, that they may do whatsoever he commandeth them upon the face of the earth, upon the face of the world and the earth. He causes it to come, whether for correction or for his land or for his mercy. Hearken unto this, O Job, stand still, consider the wondrous works of God. God is in control of the clouds. Aren't we glad of that? I am. Colossians 1, 16 and 17, by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created for him and by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. By him all things consist. They were created for him and by him. And they consist by him. He holds them by the word of his power. And we don't have to worry about it. God has it under control. I want to look at that. Hebrews 1:3. God is upholding all things by the word of his power. I am of the persuasion that there has been climate change for centuries, for millenniums. Let's look back at Genesis chapter 2. Verse 4, these are the generations of the heavens and of the earth when they were created in the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens, and every plant of the field before it was in the earth, and every herb of the field before it grew. For the Lord God had not caused it to rain upon the earth. There was not a man to till the ground, but there went a mist from the earth and watered the face of the ground. That is the first climate. All right, now we go to chapter 6. We see here a climate change. Verse 17, and behold, I do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die. Chapter 7, verse 1, the Lord said unto Noah, come thou and all thy house into the ark, for thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation. Verse 4, for yet 7 days I will cause it to rain upon the earth, 40 days and 40 nights, and every living substance that I have made will I destroy from off the face of the earth. There is climate change, and it's in the Bible. No rain? Rain! 40 days, 40 nights. That's a big, big climate change. And God told Noah it's going to happen. It's going to take place. The severity of it, 40 days and 40 nights. Chapter 7, verse 11. The 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened, and the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. Chapter 7, verse 19. And the waters prevailed exceedingly upon the earth, and all the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered. Now, I've been told of a man who went down to West Virginia to buy a piece of property, and it was up on a hillside, fairly high elevation. He started kicking around at the topsoil, and he uncovered some seashells that were there. And he said, I'm not buying this piece of ground. This was flooded at one time. Well, of course it was. Right here it says it was. Where's he going to buy a piece of property that was never flooded? There was climate change back here, and the land was flooded. But God had a limit as to where it was. It stopped when the hills were covered, when the mountains were covered by 15 cubits, and God said, that's enough. It's covered. That's it. He wiped away all of the traces of pre-flood man. We don't have any fossils from before the flood. They come since that in the depositing of the earth as it came back after the flood. We don't have fossils of humans, I don't believe. We have fossils of animals. And they claim to have found fossilized humans, but not pre-flood ones for sure. All right. Chapter 8, verse 1. And God remembered Noah and every living thing and all the cattle that was with him in the ark, and God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters assuaged. Again, climate change. The fountains also of the deep and the windows were stopped, and the rain from heaven was restrained, and the waters returned from off the earth continually, and after the end of the 150 days, the waters were abated. And the ark rested in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, upon the mountains of Ararat. Verses 21 and 22. The Lord smelled a sweet savor of Noah's offering, and said in his heart, I will not curse the ground any more for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite the earth any more, every living thing, as I have done. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. What does that mean? No more climate change? No, it doesn't mean not absolutely any climate change, but not climate change that is going to destroy the earth. Not climate change that is going to wipe out mankind like this. I will not do it with water. He didn't say he'll never destroy the earth. He said, I will not destroy it with water. And there is going to be seed time and harvest. There is going to be cold and heat. There is going to be summer and winter. The seasons will pass. You go anywhere in this earth and you find rainy season and dry season. You find summer and winter. You find seed time and harvest. Every land has it. And there are some places near the equator that the change is not as drastic. The seasons are not as drastic, but every climate has seed time and harvest. Now, did God say that he would never do any local climate change? No. In fact, he promised that he would. And he told Israel in Deuteronomy chapter 11 that if they were disobedient, that he would cause it not to rain. Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 16. Take heed to yourselves that your heart be not deceived, and that you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. And then the Lord's wrath will be kindled against you, and he shall shut up heaven that there be no rain on you, and that the land yield not her fruit to you, lest you perish quickly from off the good land which the Lord giveth you. This was a local climate change that God promised he would bring upon them if they were disobedient. Did he do that? Yes, in the time of Elijah. Elijah was a man of faith, and Elijah prayed that it would not rain, and it rained not for the space of 3 years and 6 months. And then Elijah prayed again, and it rained. God kept this, which it was a local climate change. Now, after the flood, it would appear that there was a month or two, by the evidence in the geological record, that there was a generation or two that it was a warm, fairly tropical climate. If you drill down through the, when scientists drill down through the ice on Antarctica, they come down there to palm trees and macadamia trees, grass underneath that ice. When did that happen? It's frozen under there. Well, it had to be since the flood, because everything before that was wiped out. And then all that ice accumulated. And there is geological evidence that there were glaciers as far south as the Ohio Valley, and that they have been receding for many, many years. What we have is just a gradual receding of the ice caps until they are where they are today, and they're still receding. There is the regular break-off of icebergs from Antarctica, and we also have icebergs floating around in the North Seas, and the polar caps are shrinking. And that's not all bad. For many centuries, sailors have been trying to find a route around the north of North America to go from Europe to Asia, and they haven't been able to do it recently with the warming of the climate. They've been able to go across there sometimes, and it saves them 4,000 miles whenever that is opened up. That's one of the benefits of global warming. There are some other things that are happening too that would show that we are having some global warming, that they're not just imagining, but it is true. Just recently I saw in the news that the snow and ice melted enough that they found some World War II soldiers up on the Alps. They had been stranded there and were covered by ice and snow, and they were just enough of ice and snow melted that they found them and gave them a proper burial. You know what that article put into my mind? Oh, Lord, bring it on. Melt some more snow. If you can uncover that ark, that would be... I'd like to... I don't know if I could afford to take a trip over there and look at it, but maybe it would be evidence for somebody that they would truly believe that there had been a flood and that here is Noah's ark. And if he put his initials on it or something, that would help too. But that there is the ark. But then my next thought was, you know, even though somebody would rise from the dead, they probably wouldn't believe. So there are things that we see in the evidence. Now, they say that with global warming that the seas will rise. There's evidence that they have been rising for many years. Several years ago, they were worried that they're decreasing. Now they're saying they're rising. And if they continue to rise, they're going to wipe out a lot of land, going to cover a lot of land, and we'll lose acreage and square miles, and some towns and whatever are going to be underwater. Well, there is evidence, like especially in the English Channel, when fishermen fish there, they drop their lines down to the bottom, and it's about 150 feet deep, and they pull up farming tools, things that were used there, evidence that there had been farms down there at one time in the land underneath the English Channel. There's evidence that there was land that you could cross on dry land up at the Bering Strait between Alaska and Asia, and in the Afarura Sea between Australia and the mainland, only 165 feet deep, not very deep. But at some time, this land, it appears like it was covered. Does that explain how animals could go from the ark and wander across to Australia and across to America? And how some of them came and some didn't. Horses didn't come over here. The Spanish brought them over here. It helps me to understand how animals scattered to the different places, different continents and islands across the world. Now, we could present some things that would maybe make these climate change people look foolish, and then they could present some things that would make us look foolish. And we could have some kind of a debate and both come out kind of foolish. But that's not my goal here tonight. I would like to present a little bit here to help us to question some of the things that they present. And I don't want to go real far into this, but they say that carbon dioxide is what is causing the temperatures to rise. And carbon dioxide is produced by our vehicles and by our factories. And it is released into the air, and it acts like a greenhouse gas. It holds in the heat that comes from the sun and holds that, traps it in our atmosphere, and causes the temperature to rise. Well, they say that the temperature has risen about 1 degree since 1880, since they started measuring the temperature. That's quite alarming, isn't it? 1 degree in 135 years. The other thing about that is that they were reading it on a mercury thermometer. Now they have these electronic gadgets. And whenever you change your method of measuring temperature, there's a percentage there of fluctuation that you have to, you know, I think when they do their political polls, there's a 3% margin of error that they permit. And so 3%, 1 degree, I think that's within the margin of error that you could look at. That'd be one thing. And I don't want to throw that at them too hard because they could throw something back at me. But I just kind of question that I go to sleep the same time knowing that. The other is that 70% of that increase in temperature occurred before 1940, and it's since 1940 that most of the carbon dioxide has been released into the air. And actually, you probably learned it in science class that plants thrive on carbon dioxide. They use it for photosynthesis, and they produce oxygen, which we breathe. And so if there is an increase in carbon dioxide, probably we can have better crops and better lush plant life and more air to breathe. I think we can use it, and that shouldn't be a problem. So those are just some of my thoughts. And like I said in the beginning, I'm not really a climatologist, so I could be talking a little foolishly here. But if you can bear with my foolishness, I think I have the Spirit of God. Is climate change happening? I believe it is, and I believe it has been for thousands of years. Is it caused by man's activities? Probably a little. I think it probably is. Is it something to fear? I don't think so. Genesis 8:22, cold and heat, summer and winter shall not cease. And Jesus told us in Matthew chapter 6 that we're not supposed to worry about tomorrow. We're supposed to trust him, and he will take care of us. And really, I think that's what we ought to be simple enough just to trust him. Now, I do think that we ought to be careful about using the planet that we live on and replenishing where we can, avoiding contamination. Where I remember when I was a boy, you drained the oil out of the car, you put it on the driveway to keep the dust down. We did a lot of that kind of stuff. Today, you better not try it because it can get you into a lot of trouble. And it was not a good idea, probably, to do that or some of the other things that we did as well. I live in a city that produces a lot of, in the city of Allentown, we produce a lot of trash. It's a big heap of trash that we produce, and we produce it every day. You know, we're supposed to recycle, and I think that's a good thing, to recycle. I'm glad to recycle. I recycle every piece of plastic and paper that I can. I think it's a good idea not to release that into the air and burn it. Neither do I think it's good to put it in the landfills and pile up mountains of trash. But we can recycle and use it again. The metal makes good Fords. But there's a way to use things in a way that makes sense. And I think where we can, we should. I don't like having to replace the catalytic converter on my car. It's expensive. And I know the exhaust shops don't mind doing it, but it costs a lot of money. But you know, these environmental people have done us a lot of good. You look back, if you remember, or you look back in the history and look at some pictures of how the cities were back in the 60s and the 50s and 60s, And there was a lot of smog, that yellow haze hanging over the cities. And you went into the cities, you almost had to hold your nose. And we used to have these fresh air children that we get from the city and bring them out in the country for fresh air. And now I live in the city and I come out into the country and I think about taking some of these country children into the city for fresh air sometimes, you know, but it depends what the farmers are doing. But, you know, there's that absence of the smog is one of the benefits we have from the environmental people. They have cleaned up a lot of the air and a lot of water, and we benefit from that. They may have misplaced goals and misplaced priorities, but I think we're healthier because of some of their efforts and some of their concerns, and so we shouldn't worry too much about all these other laws. Yeah, they drive up costs and all that, but we're to live quietly in the land and be at peace and respect others. And I think we can do it. Philippians 4, 4 to 7 gives us four things to do. We are to rejoice. You know, we could complain, we could worry, we could fuss and fume about new laws and all that kind of stuff and say, I'm not going to work with it. I'm not going to do this and fight that we don't have to put so we don't have to put a sand mound in or whatever. But the Bible tells us to rejoice. Rejoice always. It's the next thing it says there in Philippians 4, 4 to 7 is that we're to let our moderation be known unto all men. Don't go to extremes. Don't get wound up one way or the other, either fighting for environmentalism or against it, but let your moderation be known unto all men. The third thing is, don't worry. Used to say, don't worry, be happy. Well, yeah, rejoice and don't worry. That's biblical. And the fourth thing is to pray. I think we need to pray for these people that are fearful and pray that they would learn to trust God and to do it more. Does the Bible talk about a future climate change? Absolutely, it does. In fact, pretty much of the book of Revelation, from chapter 6 through 18, is pretty much climate change in there. If you think about it, somebody said 100-pound hailstones. It sounds like climate change. Probably is. I've never seen any that large. But if you take that literally, that's a big hailstone. 2 Peter 3:7-12. The heavens and the earth, which are now by the same word, shall be kept in store, reserved unto fire against the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. But, beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years. 1,000 years is one day. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is longsuffering to usward, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in night, in which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with a fervent heat, and the earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy conversation and godliness? That is global warming. It's coming. And it's not man-made. Not related to carbon dioxide at all. It's the wrath of God. May we prepare for that day.